And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 805, continuing our team-by-team previews for the fantasy baseball season, heading to Boston to talk about the Boston Red Sox. In order to do so, got a friend of mine, friend of the show. You can find his work at Rotoballer, the Toolshed Podcast. He's got his Patreon for Toolshed and a lot of other great stuff. He's always doing something. He's tweeting up a storm at Eric Cross MLB. Eric Cross, how you doing, my friend?
I am doing great. Happy New Year to you, Bubba.
Happy New Year to you as well. It's it's crazy. 2026 already, pitchers and catchers in like 40-ish days, give or take.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
It's great. So. It's we're like past like the, what do you call it, like the baseball offseason solstice or whatever. Like we're past that halfway mark where we're closer to, you know, everything starting up again than the end of the World Series. So yeah, we're getting there, man. And a good way to get through it is just keep talking about this game we love.
Yep, that's what we do. I know you're just as busy, if not more busy, than I am. So, yes, it's what we do to keep the train rolling, as they say. Before we get into the Boston Red Sox, I mentioned where they can find you. Let people know what you got going on, because like I said, you're always up to something. It's always really good stuff.
I appreciate that. Right back at you. Yeah, it helps that I love doing this, right? Like I just love baseball, love making content centered around baseball. So, yeah, I'm Patreon. I put out stuff close to daily over there and been doing – positional, dynasty and prospect rankings, nearly done with those. I'll be doing some redraft content coming up too, now that we're kind of really getting into, you know, redrafts ticking up now that all the fantasy football folk are coming back over to the good side here from football. And I got plenty of stuff going on over at Rotoballer as well, and Toolshed. So doing, you know, positional previews for dynasty focus on that side of it and prospect rankings. So yeah, a lot of good stuff going on.
Yes, indeed. So go check them out. For some reason, you are not. All right, let's talk Boston Red Sox here. It's a team that always feels like the fan base, at least for sure, feels like they should always be in it. And then the offseason happens, or even last year in season, like, what's he doing? And then it actually kind of worked when they traded Devers and company. Just a weird situation, but always feels like they need to be there because they usually are there. Before we get into the players, what were your thoughts on how 2025 ended up going for the Red Sox?
Man, 2025 was just a kind of an odd year. I mean, obviously, you know, made the postseason, which is great, and didn't, you know, do much in the postseason. But, you know, the whole Devers saga was just really weird. Kind of gave me like 2012 vibes a little bit. And for those that don't recall, that was the Bobby Valentine year here in Boston, where it was just more of a soap opera than a baseball season that year. This year wasn't quite on that level, but that whole, you know, bringing in Bregman thing, and then Devers is all upset, and then obviously we, you know, Red Sox ended up trading him. Now Bregman might be not be coming back, so it's just a weird year, start to finish. But there was a lot of positives too, which were really exciting. Obviously, Garrett Crochet becoming the stud that we all hoped that he would become. Roman Anthony and the other young guys debuting, and you know, Anthony obviously having a great stint before getting hurt. Some of the other guys showing some signs of upside, you know, like Toley had that start against Skeens in his debut. Early had a good few starts to end the year. You know, Meyer came up, Campbell came up and all that. So it was a fun year. It was good to get back to the postseason, even if we got spanked by, you know, rookie Cam Schlittler, who had pitched one of the better postseason games I've seen in my lifetime. It's definitely up there, especially for a rookie, no less. So, yeah, kind of a weird up and down season, but overall, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, no, I'd say it's still, you know, get to the postseason, see what happens. That most people would take that and right. Walk away. The Red Sox aren't most people, but we'll see where this year goes, and that's what we're here to talk about. So we'll start with the hitters, as usual, on this show, and we'll start with Roman Anthony, who obviously had a season cut short due to injury. It feels like if they would have made it maybe another round, he might have been coming back to the team. He still finished with 8 homers, 4 steals at .292 over his 71 games with the Red Sox. Big-time prospect, obviously. Don't have to say too much there. Over the last 10 NFBC Draft Champions drafts, Roman Anthony has an ADP of 64. Now, I've heard a lot of mixed reviews on, is he worth it in the fantasy world? Is he a better real-life player? That is an interesting conundrum out there. What are your thoughts on Roman Anthony as we enter 2026?
Yeah, that's a legit question because – even though you look at, you know, all the skills that he has, look at the metrics under the hood, which are all, you know, for the most part, really, really damn good. You know, he only did have 8 home runs and 4 steals and, you know, roughly half a season worth of plate appearances. you know, because, you know, the one kind of issue that's always limited him to some degree was just not hitting the ball at ideal angles. You know, he has a ground ball rate above 50%, so that limits the power, even though he has elite quality of contact. I mean, 60% hard hit rate, 15.5% barrel, EV close to 95 miles an hour on average. So, you know, he hits the ball extremely hard. He's already among the league leaders in basically every category that has to do with power. But when, you know, a lot of that's line drives and ground balls, yeah, that's still, you know, fine and all. You're still hitting the ball hard. But, you know, for us, I mean, we treasure that home run. You know, maybe he's not the 40-plus homer guy like a Nick Kurtz could be. Even though their quality of contact is very similar, I think Anthony's might even be a little bit better. We look at some of the metrics, but Kurtz hits the ball in the air to the pole side, you know, more consistently, so that helps him get that home run total up, as opposed to Anthony, who was on pace for like 16, 17, 18 home runs over a full season. But at the same time, you know, I do think you're going to see 20-plus home runs from Anthony, maybe around 10 steals. He's always shown that he'll add at least some stolen base element to his game, even though he's not a fast guy by any means. But, you know, probably going to hit leadoff for the Red Sox. We'll see, you know, what the exact final lineup is behind him. But it should be at least a good, possibly even a great lineup, depending on what they do the rest of the offseason. So, I mean, he was on pace for like 100 runs as it was last year, given his elite on-base abilities. You could easily see 100-plus runs if he's going, you know, 20, 25 home runs, 10 steals. Should have, you know, a decent amount of RBI as well. Elite OBP, good average as well. I mean, I think he's still, I think, worth the ADP that you mentioned. Go, you know, he's probably going to be your, you know, for the most part, maybe your outfield two, or if you want to wait on outfield and then take one in that fifth, you know, round or so where he's going. I mean, I'm fine with him as like a back end outfield one. It's given the base of tools he has and the upside for even more. I think that's an appropriate spot for him.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. Like I said, people are either all in or all out on Anthony because the skills are undeniable, as you mentioned. Super talented, let's not forget, super young still. A lot of things can change with him. I think everybody just sees that profile. And I wonder if there's kind of like PTSD is like, is this Jackson Merrill 2.0 like kind of thing? Or are we doing this again? And that's fair. It's a fair question. But, you know, every player is created differently. So I think there's a way to build around him. And a thing that stands out a ton is that quality of contact you mentioned. Like, you can't teach that. That's like developed, and you work on that. And he's got that in spades. So it's pretty good stuff. Let's look at his outfield counterpart for now as we record this. I say for now, it's because he's been rumored in trades for like a year now, it seems like. And that's Jarren Duran. It's like the Red Sox want to trade him, but no one wants to give the price they want, is what it comes down to. Jarren Duran, in a quote-unquote down season, hit .256 with 16 homers and 24 steals after going 21-34 the previous season. Eric, his ADP right now is 81, basically, over the last 10 drafts. He's going about 17 picks after Roman, a full round after Roman Anthony. I am so torn on what to do with Jarren Duran every draft I'm in because, like, I see the skills. I like the price much more this year than last year where he had to pay a premium for him.
Yeah.
But it's like I don't know where he's going to be living, and that kind of slowly, like, makes me take a step back at least. What are your thoughts on Duran?
I really like the ADP on Jarren Duran. Yeah, we'll have to see if he's still here come opening days. You mentioned, yeah, it has been. It feels like forever he's been, you know, dangled out there in at least in trade negotiations. But hey, you know, I'm fine with the Red Sox, you know, holding on to him if they don't make, you know, the potential return coming back to Boston, whether that be for, you know, like a big name arm like a Cole Reagans in Kansas City or something like that. Yeah, I'm totally fine because this guy has been really good all around, and yeah, even in a down year, it wasn't quite as good as 2024 was because that was a, you know, phenomenal year. But hey, he still had 86 runs, 16 bombs, 24 steals. Yeah, I feel like that's kind of like the floor of what you can expect from Duran. It's like that 15, 25-ish floor with 80-plus runs. So even if he repeats 2025, I feel like you're at least coming out even, you know, given his, you know, 80, you know, back end of the top 100 price tag right now. But if he kind of even ticks back up a little bit, doesn't need to be full on 2024 again. I mean, that'd be phenomenal, and I think that's possible. I think those skills are absolutely still in there. But even if it's like, you know, somewhere in the middle I think that's a positive ROI. If he's giving you like 18, 19 home runs, upper 20 steals, 90 to 100 runs with a 260, 270 average, I think that's definitely a positive ROI on a back end, you know, 80 to 85 ADP, you know, price tag. So, yeah, I'm a Duran guy. I've always been a Duran guy. I mean, last year he had some, you know, some of those personal things going on that he was dealing with. So you got to wonder if that did weigh on him a little bit. It's hard to say, but you know, the skills are still there. He's still an elite runner, 91st percentile sprint speed. You know, he's still got plenty of bat speed, hits the ball hard, 47% hard hit rate, average EV near 92 miles an hour. So all the skills are still there. You know, that doesn't strike out too much. You know, above average zone contact rate, doesn't chase at a high clip. No real red flags in the profile. So again, I think it's given you're paying for what you got last year, and that's fine. And if he bounces back, you know, closer to 2024, I think that's a good value. So I like Duran a lot at that ADP, and that's probably your outfield two in that range. So if I get Duran as an outfield two who has outfield one upside, I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, and I fully agree. And it's one of those, like, since I'm a degenerate, I draft the second the draft room's open. And so, like, I have, like, this weird taste in my mouth about how Duran's year went. When the more you and I, like, you maybe you can relate to this, I don't want to speak for you, but the more we do off-season work, you start realizing, okay, wait a minute, like, you take a step back, and like you were just saying, like, that was still a very good season, like a very right. good season. And it wasn't even as like peak. Like, what if he meets in the middle of the two? Like, we're talking still 2025 or something. Like, there's a lot of room for really good stuff for Jaren Duran. And so, like, the more I've gone on in the offseason, I'm like, yeah, that is a good price. Like, I should be there. It's like a Michael Harris type profile. Maybe Michael Harris for a better average, maybe. But like the power, the speed, and Duran might actually towards the top of an order. Like, there's like levels to it. So I'm with you on Duran. The more I've gone through my prep, I'm much more inclined to be interested in a guy like Jared Duran. And I kind of hope people maybe aren't as interested, because maybe on an auction room or something, you could get him for a lot cheaper yeah. than he should probably go for. So I'm very, very interested to see where his price tag continues to move.
Yeah, it's funny too that you mentioned that, how, like, you know, once we let the dust kind of settle a little bit from the previous season, and you know, we roster one of these guys that, you know, I had Duran in a few leagues, and yeah, once you kind of like sit back and like, all right, it wasn't exactly what I wanted or what we hoped for when drafting him, but hey, it was still pretty damn good. Like, yeah, it's, you gotta kind of like, we gotta let that dust settle a little bit and really dig in, like, hey, there's still a lot of good in the profile. So yeah, Duran's just another example of that for sure.
Most definitely. All right, the Red Sox have made two big trades with the Cardinals this offseason. And we'll start with the latter, the second of the two, because we're talking hitters first. And they picked up veteran Wilson Contreras to man first base. Wilson's coming off his first full season as a first baseman at the major league level, played 135 games for the Cards, 20 homers, hit 257. It's the most games he's played since 2018, because he's always banged up at catcher. So maybe the transition was a good idea for the old man. Wilson Contreras can still hit, maybe not to the extent people are hoping, but he still can. And his ADP is almost 201 over the last 10 drafts, which is deep, and especially for a first base position that kind of has some question marks after the elite of the top. Where are you at on Wilson Contreras? He's an old man. I can say these things, but at the same, he's actually only 34, which is surprising. You would think he's an old man. So where are you at on Wilson Contreras?
Yeah, it's funny. I say he's an old man. He's even younger than me. So it feels weird that we're starting to call these guys old and they're still younger than us. But that's the joys of getting older. But, yes. You know, I like Wilson Contreras. I've always been a Wilson Contreras guy. You know, he was always a fun, one of my favorite catchers to target, you know, back, you know, a few years ago when he still was catcher eligible. It's because I felt he always, for the most part, was a decent value in drafts. And now at first base, kind of a similar thought process, because you mentioned the ADP right at pick 200 in first base. I mean, you got the studs, you got Kurtz flat at the top, and even some of the older guys that are the top options, like, what are we getting from Matt Olson this year? What are we getting from Bryce Harper this year? You know, a lot of those, is Michael Bush legit? I think he is, but you know, there's a lot of those questions though. There's not a lot of certainties even, you know, in that top 10. So, you know, I think you gotta kind of get your second first baseman and kind of fill that corner infield spot kind of quickly this season, because Third base ain't much back. Third base is kind of questionable too. So, yep. I think if I wound up with a guy like Wilson Contreras as my quarter infielder in drafts, I would be happy with that because, I think now that he's, first base only, in a good hitter's park for right-handed power in Fenway, and then especially when, whenever Cassis is ready, maybe, they give Contreras some, additional time at DH as well. So maybe he's, first base 90 to 100 games and at DH like 40, 50 games or whatever, kind of keep him fresh, as, 34-year-old. So I like the bat a lot. There's still plenty of bat speeds, plenty of quality of contact. Yeah, the contact rates are a bit below average, but nothing, super, red flag right now. So I think he still get hit kind of right where that range where he has been, like 255, 260, 265, right around there. And I think you're going to see the best power year from him yet. I actually have a bet going with a buddy of mine, Bob Oz. Good people might know him. Yep. He's on a little bit of fantasy stuff. He's on a Red Sox podcast I do. We did the over-under at 24.5 for home runs for Contreras this year. His career high is 24, so I took the over, so if I were to win this, it'd be a new career high for Contreras. But assuming you can get 140, 150 games out of him this year, with the right-handed pull power he has at Fenway, last year his pull air rate went up to a career best 19.8%. That's very, very good for Fenway. So yeah, I think I Contreras a lot. I think he can give you like a 260. Mid to upper 20s home run type of year, maybe 80, 90 RBI, 70 to 80 runs. And he still got runs a little bit too, like 6, 4, and 5 are stolen base totals the last few years. So he's not a zero there either. If you're getting like 25 and 5 with 90 RBI, 75 to 80 runs and a 260 average at pick 200, that's a really good value for your corner infield spot. So yeah, I'm eating up that 200 ADP all day.
Yeah, no, the point you made about corner infield, it's a perfect corner infielder. I'm with you there, guys. I was writing up first base stuff the other day for our Patreon, the Bubble and the Bloom one, and you mentioned the first base, third base dichotomy. Third base is like so bad that I want my corner infield to be from first base if I have the choice. So that's why I want, like, you make a great point there. Like, there's the Contreras, the Christian Walkers of the world, those kind of guys that fit that mold well. And Wilson Contreras should 100% be there. And I'm just shocked his ADP is where it's at. Like, I'd expect that to climb, but it really hasn't of late. So very, very surprising. Let's talk Willy Abreu, who, last season felt like they didn't want him in Boston. Well, now he's here and they really want him in Boston, it sounds like. 22 home runs last year, hit .247 over 115 games. He platoons a bit, but it sounds like maybe that's changing. Not quite sure there. ADP's .227 though, Eric. Like, this could be a nice price tag if he gets that regular playing time. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, it absolutely could. And I like Willy Abreu a good bit. I mean, especially from like a real life perspective, two straight gold gloves, start his career. That's awesome. But the power is absolutely there. 22 home runs last year, 15 year before that. Has yet to play over 450 plate appearances, though. That's kind of the thing. He's been limited, as you mentioned, a little bit by platooning. There have been some injuries along the way. And he's hit the IL a few times already in the last few years. So that is a concern. Like, can he stay healthy? Can he give you 600-plus plate appearances? But I think that's kind of baked into the draft cost, though. You mentioned that the draft cost is not that much at all. Outside pick 200, at that point, what is your outfield? 4 probably. Maybe 3. Maybe 3 if you had waited a little bit. But I feel like generally the average should be taken as your outfield 4. I think that's a pretty good upside as your outfield 4 because he has the power, good bat speed, barrels up the ball. I think full year, 30 home runs is possible if he's, playing that much. And they have hinted that getting him more playing time. Now, that's still a absolute glob of outfielders in Boston unless they trade one of them. So we'll see on that front. But again, I feel like that risk of, the platooning and only giving you like 450, 500 plate appearances is already baked in. So if he's able to give you more, stay healthy, and kind of take that next step, which I think is possible, I think this could possibly be a really good value if he's giving you 30 home runs, 5 to 10 steals, and like a 250 average or so. I think that's really good value. And yeah, I like Abreu a lot. He needs to stay healthy, but I think he's one of the better kind of value outfielders after that top 200 or so in drafts.
Fully agree. And he feels like he's one of those that if they do trade Duran, that price is going to go up.
Yeah,
like big, sure. Like big time. Because I think a lot of it is the question of playing time right now with Abreu. And you've mentioned it, like the rumors are out there that they're talking they want him to play. So it makes sense if they can actually ship Duran, which is a big if, because they want like first round picks for him, it feels like. But we'll see where that goes. Trevor Story coming off a monster season, 25 homers, 31 steals, 91, 96 in the runs and RBIs, while hitting .263, all of those just blowing away the last few seasons. Not to mention the most important stat, 157 games played. Hasn't done that since 2018. So all great things for Trevor Story. But I guess, Eric, the question is, can he do it again? Because his ADP is 111, where last year it was like almost 300. So you actually have to pay for it this year. Are you a believer in what we saw last year from Trevor Story, who will also be 33 this year? Like, they feel like an old team, but they're not that old.
I know, right? Yeah. Now, I as a player, as a Red Sox fan, I like Trevor Story a lot. I think he's a great clubhouse guy for everything you hear. And I think what we saw, you know, skills-wise last year, you know, production-wise, was legit. I mean, he's still a good power speed threat, hits the ball hard, still has a, you know, pretty good sprint speed as well. But I just don't trust him to stay healthy to that extent 2 years in a row. I mean, when's the last time he had 600 plate appearances 2 years in a row? It was 2018 and 2019. So that's a long time ago. That was, you know, pre-COVID at this point. So that was, feels like forever ago. So I think the odd, maybe he will. And as a Red Sox fan, I hope he does, as I think he's a very important part of this team's plans. But just realistically, I think the odds are of him doing another 157 games are pretty slim. So given that he's, you know, close to a top 100 price tag, yeah, I don't hate it, but I'm probably not going to end up with a lot of Story shares this year, just simply because I don't believe in him staying healthy enough to kind of repeat last year. And if he does, I think that actually, if he stays healthy, that actually might be a value, you know, because look at what he did last year when he went 25, 31, 91 runs, 96 RBI, 263. That is, you know, value better than 111 ADP. That's like a top 50 player right there. But I just don't trust the durability. I mean, and I don't think it's going to magically start getting better. You know, as he gets into his mid-30s, he's not 25 anymore. No, he's 33, 34 this season. So I like Story, but given, you know, the rest of the shortstops, you know, I think at this point I probably already have my starter for the most part. I'm probably looking more at the middle infield spots at this point. I'd rather go someone I feel a little bit safer about than a Trevor Story, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's where I've been sitting this season. Like, I was very excited about the price tag last year. I'm like 20-20 upside. Hopefully the average sticks. Now you got to pay for it, and I'm not sold on the health. I could be totally wrong on this one, but I'm with you when it looks at Trevor Story. All right, let's go behind the dish. Carlos Narvaez had a really strong rookie campaign. 15 homers, 241. Doesn't sound really strong, but actually was pretty darn good. Kind of flailed a little towards the end, but yeah, overall, really good job there filling in for Connor Wong and never giving the job back behind the dish. Narvaez ADP is 293 over the last 10 drafts. Seems like a late catcher, too. Where are you at on Narvaez?
Yeah, I think he's an ideal C2. I really do. You know, some people think there's like more on the tank. I'm not sure I'm there. Like, I don't think he's ever, you know, C1 for fantasy purposes, even in like a 15 teamer. But I think he's a really solid C2, because I do think that starting catcher spot is his now. Like, there's no like Connor Wong, I don't think, is going to work his way back in unless there's an injury or Narvaez falls flat on his face, because Wong was absolutely terrible when he was healthy last year. So I don't think there's any threat to that. I think, you know, it's there's no split in time. Like, it's Narvaez's job. So I think that's like half the battle or two thirds of the battle in trying to find a C2 that you can rely on. Like, hey, who's going to actually get the playing time? You can get me, you know, 100 plus games or something like that. And I think Narvaez absolutely is there, given, you know, how much value he brings to the Red Sox with everything else he does, being behind the plate, you know, framing, throwing out runners, all this and that, calling a game. So he's very valuable to the Red Sox. And I think offensively, he's fine. I mean, he's not a standout, but you look at, there was above average quality of contact, you know, 45% hard hit rate, you know, 9% barrel rate, that'll play. You know, walk and K rates were in the vicinity of league average, contact rates a tick below, but not bad by any means. So I think last year, when, you know, that 240 15 type, I think that's actually pretty close to what we should expect. I mean, he can give you that mid-teens home runs. He can give you an average that won't absolutely kill you. I mean, 240 for your C2, that's fine. So even if he repeats last year, I think if you're getting him as your C2 in an NFBC format, I think that he's like right in that mid-range, like solid, just plug him and forget him for the most part. Yeah, I think he's really valuable in that format. But obviously those listening that are, you know, playing just, you know, a 12-team Yahoo League or just a single-catcher format, he's not really going to be on your radar unless you have like super deep benches. But yeah, in NFBC, two-catcher formats, I like Narvaez a lot as a C2.
Yep, he is a boring is beautiful catcher too. There's a lot to 100%. Like. He's not going to be flashy, but by the end of the season, you're going to be pretty excited with how things turned out for you there. But like you said, catcher two, deeper formats, not your single catcher leagues. Let's talk Marcelo Meyer. If you've watched Twitter, he's putting on weight, folks. Muscle, one might say. We saw last year the four homers, 228 and 44 games before his season ended. One of the, you know, he was right next to Roman Anthony as a very excited prospect. Anthony was, you know, obviously more elevated than Meyer, but they're both kind of on the same trajectory there for a while. Now Meyer has an ADP of 384 at a third base position entering the season. I tend to like that. I've also had people tell me it's like I've seen mixed results basically on the Marcelo Meyer train. Where do you sit on this one?
I mean, in general, I think I've been a little bit lower than most, especially, you know, in Red Sox land here on Marcelo Meyer. Like, I like him. I've never been like gaga over the, you know, over the fence for him, like, you know, Roman Anthony or even like Christian Campbell last year before everything kind of went south. But, you know, there's solid power here. Like the one area, you know, and this is a guy I got to see a lot in Double A. I was fortunate to see, you know, him and Campbell and Anthony and all of them, Kyle Teal before he went to the White Sox in Double A. He hits the ball hard. Like, this is a potential 25 homer bat, but the one big issue for him that I kind of think gets undersold is the durability. Like, he has not shown at all, you know, that he can stay healthy for a full season. He's missed, you know, good chunks of every year. He was drafted back in 2021, excuse me. And every year since then, he's missed good chunks of the season with various issues. So can he hold up to the rigors of a 162-game major league season? I think that's question still needs to be answered, and we'll see. But I like the power, and I don't think he's going to be, you know, a high average guy, probably more of like a 240, 250 guy. But I think that if that comes with 25 home runs, I think that's, you know, at near pick 400, that's decent value. I think just because the ADP is near 400, I'm fine with it. I mean, if it was like in the mid 200s or something like that, I would be out on him at that ADP. But given that you're talking rounds, what, 25, 26, 27, something like that, whatever that equates out to being, I think that's fine. Because at that point, you're not even drafting him to be a corner infielder. You're drafting him as just like a depth guy, probably, you know, one of the first few guys on your bench at that point. So for the upside and the possibility of a 25 homer season, yeah, I think that could be pretty valuable. And he's a guy that might end up getting dual eligibility too. I think he's just third base only in basically every league right now. But if they bring back Bregman, that could shift him over to second base. Still a lot of moving parts there in Boston. So we'll see. But yeah, at that price point, I'm not opposed. I just don't have much confidence he's going to stay healthy though. That's the thing.
Yeah, no, that's a thing I've been hearing. Like, James Anderson was telling me he's not really in on Meyer for the same reasons you were talking about for the most part there. And I just like the price tag. And definitely more of a DC play for depth and taking the upside to me. And that's where the price tag, like, if it's a fab league, I'm not probably drafting Marcelo Meyer. But in a DC, I'm looking at the fab aspect there. And you mentioned second base. And right now that's where Romy Gonzalez is, coming off 9 homers, 6 steals, hit 305. To the surprise as many, for like basically a super utility role. Played first, he played second, played a couple games at third. He was all over the place. Right now, Romy's penciled in at second with an ADP of 450. Where are you at on Romy Gonzalez? Because again, he could just be a DC depth piece, but if he plays second every day, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, no, Romy's a good player for a major league team to have. Like, I love having Romy Gonzalez on the Red Sox. And you know, you mentioned he's a DC play. I mean, that's like what, right around round 30 he's going. Just given the fact that, you know, right now he has eligibility at first base and second base, which also means corner and middle infield. So really, you think about it, that's four eligible spots you can put him at. I love getting guys like Romy Gonzalez in a DC just because that versatility right there is huge. You can plug him in, you know, at multiple spots, you know, because we're all going to deal with the, you know, injuries throughout the year, and you're going to be getting down to the back end of your bench in some parts of the season in a DC. So you got to make sure you have that good depth at all those spots. And then when you can get a guy like Romy that can check off more than just one spot for you, I love it. I mean, last year, this guy had some of the best quality of contact metrics in the league. 57% hard hit rate, 93 mile an hour average EV, you know, 478 X slug, a lot of good in that profile. And yeah, it doesn't translate to huge stats on the surface, but he was on a 17, 18 homer pace, around 10 steals. He's always giving you a little bit of speed as well, while hitting for a solid average, even though the contact metrics are okay, not great. So I think that 300, you know, over 300 average is going to come back down, probably closer to that 266 range where he was in 2024. But for what he is and that ADP and the 450 range, I like Romy a lot. I don't think he's going to be – I think they bring somebody in, so he's more of like a super utility role. But I think even in that role, he can still get you 350, 400 plate appearances this upcoming year, and that'll be enough to provide decent value at that spot. So, again, another guy where you're not really looking at him and a single catcher, you know, or really a 12-team Yahoo League, I should say, where you're drafting like, you know, 250, 300 players or whatever it is. But, yeah, in a DC or in a best ball, stuff like that, I think Romy Gonzalez has a lot of value in those leagues.
Yep, fully agree. It just takes one injury to get a ton of playing time like we saw last year with Romy Gonzalez. All right, Sedane Rafaela, a guy that I've always been excited about and then confused with how they keep moving him around. He's probably just as confused, but he gets you 15 homers, 20 steals, basically back-to-back seasons, hits around 245, 250. Like, that's a stable core for a second-base outfield player with an ADP of around 133. Going to be 25 this year, so still some hope, I guess, that he could be even more than that if they stop, you know, yo-yoing him maybe. Where are you at on Sedane Rafaela? Because you got to pay the price, but at second base, it's not a horrible price.
Yeah, if he ends up being the second baseman, I mean, he already has eligibility, which definitely helps. So, yeah, with how bad that position is, I mean, there's not even the top guys at second base. You know, like Marte is getting older. He's had some injuries. You know, Jazz is fun, but he's a little bit inconsistent. So even like the top guys, there's a lot of question marks. Can Jackson Holliday take that next step? Can Ozzy bounce back? Can Brendan Lau stay healthy? It's like, everybody basically at that spot has question marks. So once you get down there, it's like, all right, you know, Rafaela with that eligibility isn't bad. And that's the only reason where I would consider him is if I'm looking at second base, because as an outfielder, I don't know, I'm not digging him at that range. But if I kind of don't get one of those top options, I'm fine plugging in Rafaela at second base for fantasy. I hate the fact that they keep mentioning it for real life. Like it boggles my mind that you have one of the best defensive center fielders in all baseball. Like, oh, let's just put him at second base because we can't fill that hole. No, stop it. I'd rather play Romy Gonzalez there or Nick Sogard or whatever, anybody else. You know, just because he can play doesn't mean he should. But you know, Rafaela, I think offensively, I mean, what you've seen, I think, is what you're going to get from him. He's super, super aggressive. And we've seen that these guys that are hyper-aggressive, they go through peaks and valleys. Like there was a month or month and a half stretch. And like, I want to say it was like around June or maybe late May where Rafael was an absolute beast. Like he was just on fire. And then he went in an absolute slump in like July, August, because, you know, you look at it, what was the chase rate? 42% chase rate. Like these guys like him and Yainer Diaz and Pete Carr Armstrong's way up there too. And we saw the ups and downs of PCA. So it's just, these guys tend to be, you know, very streaky, have those prolonged peaks and valleys, which can be fun and maddening throughout the course of a season. But at the end of the year, I mean, like you said, he's been pretty consistently the same exact player offensively the last 2 years. So if you pencil him in for, you know, around 80 runs, 15 to 20 home runs, same thing with the steals, I think you can expect that. And if he does take that next step, maybe learn some more patience, you know, and be able to do more damage offensively, I think there's a possibility of a top 100 player here. So that's kind of like, I don't love the ADP, but since he does have second base eligibility, and if I need to fill that spot, I'm fine getting him in that range, like that, you know, round 9 or so range, if I need him for second base.
Yep, I'm with you. And like, there's probably a world where outfield works, but it's primarily a second base play for me at that point, because he goes right after like the Ketel Martes of the world and everything, and it starts dropping off rapidly at the position. Before we move on, I need to ask you, as a Red Sox guy, what are we doing with Tristan Casas? His ADP is 369. He's, you know, the videos are coming out, and the hype train was so large for this man, but he just can't keep himself on the field. So where are you at on Casas, especially, like, I'm wondering, since they traded for Wilson Contreras?
Yeah, with Contreras in the mix now, I'm not going after Casas at the ADP. And I was already hesitant before that, just because I was like, all right, when are we actually going to see this guy? Is he back for opening day? Is it more like May? I even heard some June reports. I've heard like a wide range of reports on when he's going to be back and healthy. So just given that uncertainty, I was already kind of hesitant to invest at all at any cost this year, really. But now that Contreras is in the mix and they still have 73 outfielders they're trying to find time for. So right now, I don't see where he really fits, because you got to figure, unless they trade, you know, Duran or Abreu, you got to figure probably Duran's in a DH spot or Roman's in there a little bit. So you're not going to get a lot of time for him at DH as well. He probably starts out in AAA to kind of, you know, get his feet back underneath him, get some momentum back before they bring him back up. But even at that time, if everyone's healthy, there still isn't like that spot for him. So I feel like his value and me maybe wanting to draft him will have to depend on what the Red Sox do for the rest of the offseason. So there's still potential for another move or two here. They're very quiet right now, so maybe something's cooking behind the scenes. But I feel like when Craig gets quiet, that's before a move happens. So I don't know. We'll see. But right now, I like Casas in general. I've always been a big Casas guy, but I am concerned that he's one of the, you know, I'm not saying he's out of shape, but he's like that big lumbering frame where I feel like those types of guys have a hard time staying healthy, where he took a swing and basically his rib cage exploded for the most part. So I don't know. There's a lot of good there, but some red flags. So unless that spot opens up for him, I'm probably out for this year.
No, that's totally fair. I have no shares and probably won't have any shares. Let's head to the mound. Let's head to the mound, and we kick it off with the dude that you guys traded for. It was an absolute beast in Garrett Crochet. I don't have a whole lot more to add besides the fact he threw career-high 205 innings. Ratios are great. Strikeouts are great. ADP's around 10. I have him as my SP2. What are your thoughts on Garrett Crochet this year?
Oh, man. I mean, I usually don't go pitcher first round, but there's three damn good ones that I'd be more than happy taking with, you know, obviously him and Skeens and Scooble. Crochet, he's just a stud, like just a beast. I mean, not only is he really good, like we have a lot of pitchers that are like really, really good, like elite guys like Hunter Brown, you know, Brian Wu, these types, you know, Christopher Sanchez, so many good guys that are, you know, aces for fantasy. But then like there's only really a handful in baseball that I think are just like that true ace stud. Like you can, you know, he has that mentality. I think it's really like that top tier, like Scooble, Skeens, Crochet, maybe a couple of others, but I have no issue with drafting him first round. I mean, what's the ADP, like 10 or 11? So you're getting him kind of like that two-thirds of the way through the round. I am totally fine. If I were to go a pitcher in the first round, again, I'm fine with all three of these guys. I think he's pretty safe at, well, okay, as safe as a pitcher can be. We know no pitcher is safe these days, but you figure he gave you over 200 innings, over 250 strikeouts, elite ratios across the board. Like, his worst percentile slider was 66th percentile. Like, everything was upper third of the league or elite. You know, there's no red flags. Like, walk rate under 6%, even. The guy doesn't walk anybody. K rate, super high. All the ERA indicators are under 3 the last couple of years. I mean, it looks legit as legit can be. So, yeah, I love Crochet. I love that he is leading this Red Sox rotation. And that's a guy, you make that trade, even though the White Sox got some good pieces, obviously, you make that trade 1,000 times out of 1,000, and now he's the leader of this Red Sox rotation for the next several years. So, yeah, I am all in on Crochet, and totally fine taking him in the first round.
Yep, I'm usually not an early pitcher guy, but I'm Same. Starting to buy, like, Scooble, Crochet. I like Skeens. I think he's amazing. Like, I always feel bad kind of putting away, but something about Scooble and Crochet that I just trust so, so much more.
Yeah.
The first trade that the Red Sox made with the Cardinals was for a pitcher that I've always loved because, again, I'm a boring, is beautiful guy, and Sonny Gray is that dude. He eats up innings. Ratios are usually really good. Last year, not so much, but under the hood, things were just fine. And the strikeouts get better and better in recent years for Gray. ADP is close to 110. What are your thoughts on Gray as he makes his first season calling Boston Fenway Park home?
Yeah, no, I'm actually, you know, kind of into Gray this year. It's because, you know, the price tag is not bad. I mean, he's probably going to be your SP3, I feel like, on most teams. So, or somewhere in that range, depending if you want, you know, you go heavier or you wait a little bit. You know, I wouldn't like him as my SP2. Let me put it that way. SP3 or beyond, I'm totally fine with a guy like Sonny Gray because, like you mentioned, he is, you know, may not be the flashiest guy in the world. He's 36 now. He's older, but this is a guy that, you know, look at the last 3 years, 165 or more innings each year, 180 or more Ks each year, over 200 strikeouts each of the last 2 years. And there's only like a handful of guys that have gone over 200 each of the last 2 years. And yeah, the ERA jumped to 4.28, you know, XERA, one of the indicators were a bit lower than that. But, you know, look at the strikeout minus walk rate among the best in the league. I think he was like eighth or ninth in K minus walk rate this past year. I mean, he had 21.7% K minus walk rate last year. It was 24.5% year before that. So you're getting, you know, above average strikeouts. You're getting the volume, which is like half the battle these days, is just finding those guys that'll give you the volume. I mean, he's given you that the last 3 years. And even if the ERA doesn't go back down to where it was a couple years ago, like, you know, even if he's just like a mid three ERA guy, if you're getting like a 3.5 with a decent enough whip and, you know, 180 plus innings and 200 plus strikeouts, that's basically what you want for your SP3. And there's a little upside for even more than that. So, like, he could return back end SP2 value. So, yeah, I'm totally fine with Sonny Gray as like an SP3 this year for sure.
Yep, all aboard that train as well. All right, I'm just going to give a large setup to this and let you run with it wherever you want. The back three of this rotation, according to roster resources, Brian Bello, Cutter Crawford, and Patrick Sandoval. Okay, this could happen. You have Connelly Early, you have Peyton Tolle, and who knows what else the Red Sox will do. How do you foresee the back end of this rotation come opening day? And what would you like in fantasy when it comes to, like, say, those five, or maybe I'm missing somebody?
Yeah, so I can say right now, if one of Early or Tolle aren't in that rotation, Red Sox fans will burn Fenway to the ground. Like, they will be so pissed off because of what we saw from, especially Early. I think Early's got the upper hand on Tolle, even though I still like Tolle a good bit, but Early had those four starts last year. So I think it would be foolish for one of those two not to be in. And again, I think it's Early over Tolle as of now. So I think he's got one of those last spots. I think Bayo's, you know, he's absolutely going to be in there. He's probably the three as of now. We'll see if they bring anybody else in. But, you know, I think Bayo's the three, and I think Tolle gets one of those other two spots. So it comes down to, I mean, there's like 400. We have so much pitching depth. It's actually insane right now. It's a good thing to have. But I do think Cutter Crawford is the fifth guy because he has been there for the Red Sox. He's been there for, you know, several years now. Drafted him back in 2017. He had a couple good years in the major leagues where he was like, I think a top 50-ish or close to it. Fantasy SP back in, was that 2024, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. So, like, he's shown that he can be a solid, like, SP4 for the major league type. You know, for fantasy, he's more like a, you know, SP6-7. But so I do think if I had to guess Bayo, Crawford, and Connelly Early, I am not in on Bayo whatsoever, even though the price tag on him is not even bad. It's 337. Yes. That's fine. I think he's Brady Singer 2.0, where it's, you know, the ERA last year was not realistic. There was, you know, a lot of luck that went into that. Indicators are more like 4.5, 4.6 range. He doesn't really strike anybody out. So he's a sinker baller with a mediocre K rate. He's basically a younger version of Brady Singer. So ADP is not bad by any means, but I just don't see him repeating last year. So I'm kind of out on Bayo in general. Cutter Crawford, I mean, you can get him. Where's his ADP? 543.
I love Cutter Crawford, man.
Yeah, at that point, I love that ADP. I am 100% in on that. Johan Oviedo is in the mix too. Who they got, and his ADP is top 400. I would much rather go Cutter Crawford 145 picks later than an Oviedo, even though he's a fun arm for sure. I have no idea what role they're going to use him in and how many innings he gives you. But Connelly Early, I think, is really, really intriguing. I saw him double A in, I think it was May, and he was fine. He didn't blow me away, but he just got better and better throughout the year. The fact that, you know, he's not a super hard thrower. It's like, you know, 93, 94 in that range, but he commands well, and he's got a deep repertoire where it's six pitches, you know, three different breaking balls, curve, slider, sweeper, sinker, and a changeup as well after that four-seamer. It's a good four-seamer, good movement, you know, misses bats. And while he doesn't have that one pitch with like an elite whiff rate, you know, really this is a lot of pitches like that 25, 30% whiff rate range where he can miss a good amount of bats overall without having that one dominant offering. You know, I don't think he's going to be, you know, a top 25 arm or anything like that, but I like Connelly Early a good bit. Assuming he gets one of those spots, as I expect that he will, you know, given the ADP on him being outside top 200 at that point, your SP 6, 7, 8, whatever, with upside to be an SP like 4, 5 this year. I like Early back there a lot. So I don't like those back, you know, the non gray crochet arms on the Red Sox. I love Early a lot, and Toley too. If he gets the spot, you know, his ADP is around 350, but he's, again, I think he's kind of a little bit buried right now, but Early for this year, I like him a lot.
Yeah. First off, that was great. Covered about six pitchers there because there's a ton to discuss with the Red Sox, but yep. First couple takeaways there, the Brian Bayo thing. I'm a Brady Singer homer, so like, I'm a fan of this. So the ADP of 338, you might get me suckered into a late dart on that. Like, there's no ceiling really, but the floor is pretty awesome. And I've always felt that with Bayo. It's like, we were all excited the 1 year that Pedro's working with him. He's going to develop this. It never really happened, but it's like, right. I think the Red Sox, there's a reason they have him penciled in because, hey, you can give him the ball every fifth day. He's going to give you 5, 6 innings and he can just like, enjoy that. Like, he's not going to crush you type thing more often than not.
Sure.
Like, a takeaway from ADP early on is the running theme is like, if people are drafting super early, they are hardcore into this. So like, when you see Connelly Early at 214, 215, he is the third Red Sox pitcher off the board. So it makes sense. Like, people are buying into what you're saying. And then, I like the Cutter Crawford love, because that's one thing I was curious. I just didn't know his health. I was all in on Cutter Crawford. I had so many DC shares of Cutter Crawford last year. And then things just blew up with the injuries. So if you're liking what you're seeing now, that makes me feel a lot better about him. So, yeah, a lot going on there. And then that Boston rotation. And it feels like Toley might be the – Toley, Oviedo, Patrick Sandoval could be the odd man out for now. But a lot can change there with the injuries, bullpen usage, and whatnot. Speaking of the bullpen, let's head to Aroldis Chapman, who just lit the closing world on fire last year. He's ADP is 45. He's one of the top closers off the board. Again, DC ADP, folks, relievers pushed up big time. Like, when we start talking ADP for relievers come March, it might be a little lower, should be a little lower. But right now, Chapman was a monster. He struck out the world as usual. Ratios are back down, and was one of the top saves guys in the game. So where are we at this year on Aroldis Chapman?
I'm in on Chapman. I mean, I don't generally go, you know, reliever that early. That's just my philosophy. I usually end up like my first reliever is probably more like the RP 7, 8, 9 off the board. So I'm more in like that ADP, what, like the 60, 70, 80 range where I just try to get my first one around like 5 or so. But if I were to go that early on a reliever, I'm fine. I mean, Chapman last year, I'll admit, entering the year, I had my doubts. You know, Chapman is kind of an enigma, especially here in Boston. You know, he was a Yankee. We didn't like him. You know, I thought I was actually more in on Liam Hendricks last year. Shame on me. Totally wrong on that regard, because Chapman was an absolute beast and had, you know, maybe the, you know, if not the best year of his career, like definitely up there. 1.17 ERA, 0.70 whip, you know, as a 37. He's going to be 38 for this upcoming year. And all the metrics under the hood were elite. I mean, there's a lot of red on that Savant page. K rate, you know, still over 37%. And I think the biggest thing that I think flies under the radar, because people look like, oh, look at all the strikeouts, look at the ERA. He cut his walk rate by like 250%, you know, in terms of like the ratio, not overall, obviously, but he was 14.5% each of the last 2 years before that, in 2023 and 2024, and even higher in 2021, 2022. It was 6.6% last year, career high by a mile, and leaps and bounds better than the previous, you know, half decade or so. So that's just phenomenal to make that transition, you know, at age 37. And he's going to be back in that role, you know, pencil him in for 30 plus saves, you know, and elite ratios, elite strikeouts. So yeah, RP1, you know, an upper half RP1. And he's up there with the Durans and Diaz and Munoz and Hader, all of them. I think he absolutely deserves to be taken that high. It's a matter of, I don't like going that high, but it, you know, if he fell a little bit, you know, like into the 50s or so, and I'm sitting there in like round four, I might take a stab on him, because I'm 100% believing in what we saw last year. Because I watched, you know, basically every game and saw him come in, and it was to the point where he comes in and you were like, all right, we're good. That, you know, there's a 99% chance he's not going to blow this. So yeah, he's a guy that you should love to have as your RP1.
Yeah, it's nice to have that just guy you feel confident in. It's been a while since I've experienced that. So that's a beautiful thing. It helps you win a lot of baseball games.
Probably since Brian Wilson was the last time you might have had, and he's, the guy you were super confident in.
He still made it rough, but you still felt confident he'd get through it. Yeah. So like him and Sergio Romo were kind of probably the last two.
And oh yeah. Romo had those good years. Yeah.
It wasn't like you felt great, but it was you knew they'd more often than not get out of it type deal. Been a while. Anybody else in that bullpen? Like Garrett Whitlock always seems like he's could be a closer someday, but also is really good at those multi-inning roles to keep to kind of bridge the gap in a big way. So anybody else worth keeping an eye on, or is it like who would be the next man up, do you think, if something, God forbid, happened to Chapman?
I do think it would be Whitlock, and I like Whitlock a good bit. I think he's one of the better setup guys in baseball. Especially done these now that he's back healthy. You know, maybe you see, you know, Justin Slayton's the other one that maybe, you know, if something were to happen to the Chapman, you know, as the current core of relievers right now, I think Slayton would probably be next one up, though he's not really a big strikeout arm. That's the thing. Like outside of Chapman and Whitlock, there's not a lot of big strikeout arms in this bullpen right now. I mean, the next two up are like Slayton and Greg Weissert, neither one of which had a K rate that you like to see from a fantasy reliever. So I don't know. I feel like they still add to the bullpen. So I feel like there's a guy out there who's not even on the team yet that could slot in, you know, maybe be a guy that would be the next guy up. But for now, you know, Whitlock, I think, is fine. And if you play in a saves holds format out there, I know there's some people that play in those leagues. I think he's actually got a lot of value there. And I could see him, if needed, picking up a handful of saves this year on those nights that Chapman is unavailable. So yeah, I think Whitlock is a fine target. And if you want to grab him later in a DC, like where's the ADP at? Where is he?
He's
right there. 420 or something like that. I mean, I think that's fine. Yeah, I like Whitlock a lot. There's not really a lot of good guys in that bullpen right now. But again, I feel like they will add a name or two here. So that could change. But yeah, Whitlock I like a lot.
All right, let's talk prospects. You obviously, you do a lot of prospect work. We mentioned Tolley. We mentioned Connolly early already. We've kind of discussed them. We haven't mentioned Christian Campbell yet. Any prospects we should be looking at to potentially make an impact this season, if anybody? It seems like they're more so trading guys and just getting their core put together.
Yeah, no, I mean, not really, to be honest with you. The one that I, you know, was going to bring up if we had done this like maybe a month ago before that trade was, you know, Yosinsen Garcia, but now he's in Pittsburgh. And you know, he was already blocked as it was in the outfield. But yeah, I mean, outside of the two big arms, Tolley and Early, I think they both play a good role this year, especially Early. Outside of that, though, there's not really a lot of good prospects in the upper levels right now. A lot of the guys are more like 2027 guys, like Franklin Arias or Kaisan Witherspoon, who they just drafted. You know, they traded away, like you said, they traded away a lot of these guys. So yeah, outside of Tolley and Early, I don't really see another guy that's going to come up and make a, you know, impact. Maybe David Sandlin comes up and pitches out of this bullpen at some point this year. But even then, I don't think it's going to be in any fantasy relevant capacity. So, yeah, it's really Toley and Early are the two guys this year.
All right, last question I have for you then. What are your expectations for the 2026 Boston Red Sox?
Oh, man, at this current point in time, I feel like they're kind of where they were last year, where they're definitely a postseason caliber team. I don't think they're like one of the front runners in the American League, though, at this point. Could they be with some more moves? Absolutely. I think they're a piece or two away. Do they bring in Bo Bichette? Do they bring back Bregman? Do they make a trade for, you know, Cole Reagans and Freddy Peralta? I think there's still some options on the table that could push them into that contender, you know, window, because let's face it, there's not really like that studly team in the American League right now. There's no Dodgers, you know, in the American League right now. So it's kind of wide open for a lot of teams to take. But right now they have the feel of like a 90-ish win team that could be more like 95 to, you know, upper 90s with a few more moves. So good team with a possibility of being a very good team. We'll see.
Yeah, it seems like they're close. If the young arms can continue to develop and then the bats stay healthy, it's going to be very competitive, if not dangerous, to say the least.
Could be.
All right, my friend. Always a pleasure chatting with you. Before we head out of here, plug away. Let them know where they can find you, what you got going on.
Yeah, man. Thanks. Always a pleasure chatting with you, man. Love talking baseball with you. Always have. Yeah, Eric Cross MLB on Twitter or X. You still call it Twitter at this point?
I still call it Twitter. I'm just an old man. Too. I can't change my habits.
Me too. I mean, it's just so natural to call it Twitter. So it's Twitter for so long. But yeah, that's at Twitter, X, whatever, at Eric Cross MLB. I've got my Patreon, which is toolshedfantasy.com, which is also linked in my Twitter bio. Plenty of content over on Rotoballer as well. That's kind of the site I write for. That's not behind my paywall on Patreon. And Toolshed, man, doing two episodes a week right now on Toolshed, getting through all the dynasty and prospect rankings with plenty of guests. And then I'll be switching over to a little bit of redraft. Probably have you on at some points. And just hammering away. We're in January now. It's baseball. It's baseball draft season. We're finally there, Bubba. So. It's a good feeling.
It's a very, very good feeling. And can't wait to join you. Just let me know. We've already chatted about it. So we'll make something happen there for sure. But again, if for some reason you live under a rock and are not following Eric, please do so at Eric Cross MLB. And until next time, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 805, your Red Sox team preview. Catch y'all next time.